are Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, a federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration's plan to shut down Job Corps centers nationwide, including one in Sullivan County. More than 100 staff and 175 students at the Delaware Valley Job Corps in Calicoon were at risk. We'll hear from the center's operator live this morning about what this ruling means and what comes next. Plus, local economic perspective with James B. Huntington. The Kindred Spirits summer season kicks off in Milford this weekend with a genre-spanning performance under the pavilion. Our own classical Kit has more. And who has the best hamburger in Sullivan County? A new competition is heating up. We'll learn more after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Parts of downtown Los Angeles have been cordoned off by police. This follows 3 days of protests and violent confrontations between police and protesters. Steve Futterman reports from Los Angeles. Protesters are angry over federal immigration raids.
There is a great deal of uncertainty here in L.A. The big question is whether there will be more raids and detainments of people without legal status. The violence got worse Sunday night and began to spread. Some looting took place. Police Chief Jim McDonnell.
We are overwhelmed as far as the number of people out there engaged in this type of activity and the type of things that they're doing. There's no limit to what they're doing to our officers.
President Trump has ordered National Guard troops to L.A. Governor Gavin Newsom wants those troops withdrawn. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman. In Los Angeles.
President Trump's new travel ban is in effect today. Citizens from 12 nations are blocked from coming to the U.S. Citizens from another 7 nations are under travel restrictions in traveling to the U.S. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports the Trump administration says these countries, many from Africa, lacked screening and vetting capabilities.
This ban was something Trump had promised to do on the campaign trail as a continuation of the Muslim travel ban from his first term. So day one at the White House in January of this year, Trump signed an executive order that tasked federal agencies looking into, you know, which countries had what they see as deficiencies in vetting and screening that would merit this kind of a ban. So what's going into effect today has really been something that Trump started from the beginning of his second term.
NPR's Deepa Shivaram reporting. The media outlet Warner Brothers Discovery is going to split into two publicly traded entertainment venues. One company will keep most of Warner's cable channels, such as CNN and its international holdings. The other company will retain control of its HBO Max streaming service, its movie studio, and its TV production business. Stocks open mixed this morning as officials from the U.S. and China hold trade talks in London. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 120 points in early trading.
The face-to-face trade talks follow a phone call last week between President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping. The last time, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent met with Chinese counterparts. The two sides agreed to temporarily lower the triple-digit tariffs, which had slowed much of the commerce between the world's two biggest economies. China says its exports to the U.S. fell by 35% last month compared to May of 2024. Other countries are still buying from China, though. The country's overall exports were up. Consumer prices in China fell in May for the fourth month in a row. Japan's economy shrank in the first 3 months of the year. Nevertheless, stocks were up overnight in Tokyo, Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Seoul. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News. 5 members of the far-right group, the Proud Boys, are suing the U.S. government. They're seeking $100 million. They claim their constitutional rights were violated when they were prosecuted for their roles in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. President Trump has pardoned everyone involved. More testimony is expected today in New York in the sex trafficking conspiracy trial of hip-hop mogul Sean Diddy Combs. As NPR's Isabella Gomez Sarmiento reports, a woman who accuses Combs of involving her in sex trafficking is scheduled to continue testifying.
Speaking under the pseudonym Jane to protect her identity, a woman who dated Combs until his arrest and indictment in September 2024 will return to the witness stand. Jane is the second alleged victim to testify in the government's sex trafficking charges against Combs. Prosecutors are trying to build a case that Combs trafficked Jane by fraud. He allegedly promised date nights, romantic trips, and quality time together. But when Jane arrived to meet him, Combs would allegedly pressure her into drug-fueled sexual performances with male escorts that lasted multiple days. Prosecutors showed texts of Jane telling Combs she felt used and lied to. She will continue testifying for the next few days. Isabella Gomez Sarmiento, NPR News.
The United Nations is kicking off a global summit on the world's oceans today in southern France. Policymakers, climate activists, and scientists are very alarmed at how hot the oceans are getting and about increasing pollution, such as plastics, that are killing marine life. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Council for Interior Design Qualification, whose certified designers work to protect occupants through the design of code-compliant and accessible environments. Learn more at cidq.org/NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Job Corps, the federal job training program, is getting a temporary reprieve. On Wednesday, a U.S. District Court judge in New York City blocked the Trump administration from moving forward with plans to suspend contractor-operated Job Corps centers across the country, including the Delaware Valley Job Corps in Calicoon here in Sullivan County. The ruling comes after the National Job Corps Association filed suit against the Department of Labor, arguing that only Congress has the authority to dismantle the program. Job Corps offers free residential career training to low-income youth and young adults, and at the Calicoon Center, about 177 students and 100 staff would have been impacted by the shutdown. The Delaware Valley Center is one of the largest employers in Sullivan County. Joining us now is Jennifer Cha of Adams & Associates, the organization that operates the Delaware Valley Center, to talk about the court order and what it means for students, staff, and the community. Jennifer, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the background here. What was the Department of Labor saying in this initial pausing of operations, as they phrased it?
So originally, on May 29th, we received a termination for convenience. Actually, 99 centers received those, and we were told that they were pausing operations of the Job Corps program because actually there are 20 additional centers which are run by the federal government, which were not put on pause. So what we were told on the 29th, in fact, it was not a pause. It was actually a closure because we were told to immediately stop all of our student training and immediately begin to send our students home and provide a list of any students that will not be gone within a week, and then also to begin processing all property and records and to shutter the facility by 6:30. So it was an intended full closure.
June 30th, 6:30. Interesting detail there that you were told to start sending students home immediately.
That's right. We were told to immediately start sending students home, and this was on the 29th. And in fact, in the original notice, it was no later than Tuesday, June 4th, to submit a list of any students that would not arrive home by June 6th, and what the plan would be to for them to be transported home. Now, nationally, in the Job Corps program, about 20% of students are unhoused. We also have students who are aging out of foster care and other unstable living situations, which makes it very difficult on a dime to send all students to a safe place that's permanent to live.
What were the immediate consequences for students at the Delaware Valley Job Corps in Calicoon? Were they sent home?
Indeed. Indeed. Those that could safely go. We did end up negotiating for that date to get pushed back a week. But many students did go to their home of record who had safe places to go, but not all.
Are there still students at Delaware Valley Job Corps as of now?
There absolutely are. There are about 100 students at the Delaware Job Corps Center right now, Delaware Valley Job Corps Center right now. Now, on June 3rd, as you said, the temporary restraining order was filed, and it was granted on the 4th. And what that temporary restraining order allowed is it basically said that we immediately were to stop the closure activity and students could return, could we started training as well again, and we were to go back to normal operations. And so it allowed for students to return. And so the reverse started happening. Students started returning, moving back in, and training resumed.
You mentioned nationally that some students, a certain percentage, about 20%, I think you said, are unhoused. Were any of those students also impacted here locally? Are there any unhoused students? Or do you know the status of all the students, I guess, to ask here?
Well, we did not send any students away without them having a home of record to go to. But there are certainly students who are housing unstable at the Delaware Valley Center, and they did not leave.
And what about?
And luckily, we were granted the restraining order, and so we did not have to proceed.
Right. And what about staff? I mean, I mentioned that Delaware Valley Center in Calicoon is one of the largest employers in Sullivan County, 100 or 101 staff, I think. How does that impact them? And were those folks sent home, so to speak?
So they were not sent home. Again, fortunately, that restraining order was granted. Now, that's just a temporary restraining order. There will be an injunction hearing on the 17th. Obviously, with the termination for convenience, with the facility to be shuttered by 6:30, you know, there would have to be impact to staff. There are 101 staff there. There had been no impact up by the time we were able to get the temporary restraining order, in terms of, you know, employment impact, but certainly impact in terms of, you know, their own instability and first care and concern for the students who they really, you know, pour their hearts and souls into, and then also for their own employment and their own well-being.
It's certainly causing a lot of chaos. What are you hearing from students and staff since the ruling came down for the temporary injunction? Has it eased any concerns, or is it still just unstable or instability there?
Well, it's certainly, you know, it's a reprieve, and it has granted us the relief to breathe, I would say. But the next hearing, which is on June 17th, will certainly give us a much better look at things. So I think that it's a cautiously optimistic moment to breathe, I would say, and certainly for students to come back. With the immediate shutdown that we received, we're a rolling entry and exit program, and so students are all on their own timeline. So there are literally students who may have been scheduled to receive their high school diploma the next week or complete their training or a third-party certification or may have been in the middle of an internship, and these things halted. And so imagine it was right there and it halted. So it did give us the opportunity to come back and, as I said, restart training so that students can continue to pursue those goals they have to build the future that they've really been dreaming of.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the role Job Corps plays in the lives of students who come through the center, the training and career opportunities that are provided that might not otherwise be available to them.
Absolutely. You know, Job Corps is a program that's been around for 60 years. It was started under the Johnson administration as part of his Anti-Poverty Act, and it's designed for low-income youth 16 to 24 at age of entry. And across the country, there are a myriad of trades that students can study and train on in order to go out and build a career for themselves, a livable wage, and a future for their families. At the same time, if a young person happens to not have gotten their high school diploma yet, we also offer high school diploma and GED courses as well, where students are required to earn a high school diploma because we know that that greatly improves their employment in the future. And so at the Delaware Valley Center, for example, students are studying on 8 trades. They're studying their high school diploma. And then when they graduate, Job Corps as well has a component that works with a student for up to a year after they leave to make sure that that transition out is stable, that they're working, that they have a place to live, and that they're, in fact, launched into their adulthood. And at that same time, there's a whole, it's a 24/7 operation. And that, so while, yes, we're training on trade skills, we're doing high school diploma and academic training, there's so much more to it. Employability training, social skills training, all happening at the same time. Independent living skills, how to do a budget, how to read a lease, all the things that adulting requires. We're training on 24/7, so it's really a dynamic program that provides so much opportunity for youth.
Adams & Associate operates the Delaware Valley Job Center here in Sullivan County, also operates several other centers nationally. Have you, or through the National Job Corps Association, been in touch with the Department of Labor? I mean, or is this all playing out in court?
It's playing out in court.
Okay. And what would you like to say to folks? I'm familiar maybe with Job Corps, about why preserving it matters, especially in rural areas like Sullivan County.
Absolutely. This program provides an option for students who don't have many and don't have opportunities stacked up one behind the other. It's dynamic. It provides them the skills they need in order to be job ready and to build careers. And in today's environment, it really fills a gap. Everybody doesn't need to go to college. We need skilled tradespeople in the workforce, and we need a program that supports youth in our community. And on top of all of that, when a student graduates and then they build their career, the tax money that they're going to produce over their lifetime more than will then pay for the next student to go through the program. And so it's a self-supporting program in that way.
What's your message to the students and families and communities that depend on Job Corps programs, especially here at Delaware Valley Job Corps, as I mentioned, one of the largest employers in the county, all those students, and how can the community, you know, support that community?
Absolutely. First of all, Sullivan County, Calicoon has been fantastic in supporting what's been happening and generally is so supportive of the Delaware Valley Center. So first, it's a thank you for all of that. And now, with everything that's happening, the word is write or call your congressperson, your senator. Let them know that Job Corps is important. It's important to your community. It's important to the youth in your community. It has a tremendous economic impact on the community, and that you don't want to see it go away, that you need it.
That's Jennifer Cha of Adams & Associates, the organization that operates the Delaware Valley Job Corps Center in Calicoon, New York, in Sullivan County. A U.S. District Court judge in New York City has blocked the Department of Labor from moving forward with plans to suspend the operations at Job Corps centers across the country. A hearing is scheduled for June 17th. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us, and please do keep us posted on what happens next.
Thank you so much. Save Job Corps.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
Have you heard what your neighbors are saying about the threat to public media?
I think that's totally unacceptable.
WJFF connects our whole community together.
We depend on truth, we depend on accuracy, and we depend on fair press.
I'm definitely protesting against any cuts to our local station.
Public radio is under threat, and the stakes have never been higher. Visit protectmypublicmedia.org and tell Congress to protect Radio Catskill while there's still time.
We tend to associate brainwashing with cults and hostages, but scientific historian Rebecca Lamov says it can happen to anyone.
It's not pure coercion. There's an element of participation. There's a kind of a yes, even if it's unknown to yourself or not.
The Instability of Truth, the History and Science of Brainwashing, and What It Teaches Us as Misinformation Spreads Online. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill. Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, it's Monday, and James B. Huntington is here with local economic perspective. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. good morning, listener.
All right, I forgot we had a new in there on 9 to 5 with Dolly. Hi, James B., what happened with Friday's jobs report that you can shed some light on here for us?
Well, a bunch of things here. It was strange, and I'll tell you why near the end of this. As far as jobs, a.k.a. net new non-farm payroll positions, we had 139,000 instead of 110 or 114, which were estimates. Adjusted and unadjusted unemployment finished at 4.2 and 4.0%. The former, the marquee item, was unchanged. The long-term jobless out 27 weeks or longer improved 200,000 down to 1.5 million. 100,000 fewer people working part-time for economic reasons or keeping those kinds of jobs while looking thus far unsuccessful for full-time ones. 4.6 million now. Wages, average hourly private non-farm payroll ones, did substantially better than inflation. They're now at 36.24. On the downside, we have the labor force participation rate and the employment population ratio, which dropped 0.2 and 0.3%, which is a lot for these indicators. We also have fewer people, or more people rather, than not in the labor force, about 600,000 more. The American job shortage number, which tells us how many more positions could be quickly filled if everyone knew they would be easy and routine to get, gained over 800,000, pushing latent demand for work up to 16.9 million. So overall, the strange thing was there are some indicators here of partial attachment to the labor force, which went way up. The number of people saying that they wanted to work but haven't looked for a year or more, that went up 750,000. That caused some funny gaps in the data. People who left the labor force but aren't counted in it, any of the statuses I just mentioned. Also, temporarily unavailable for work, up 350,000. I don't know whether these are new or whether this was just a one-time freakish occurrence on both of these, but overall, adding everything up, it was a positive jobs report. Not by a great deal, but by enough that it matters.
Yeah, some of the terms I'm using or hearing people use, a resilient jobs report. Also, that's making it less likely that the Fed would lower rates, as President Trump suggested on Friday, too, right?
Yes, absolutely, because there keeps being more and more jobs, and even though this 139,000 is lower than it has been for lots of months so far this year, it's still nothing that we can assume will happen because our population's growth is maybe 100,000+, including people who aren't working, people who are too young or too old and such, not in the labor force, not trying to be, but it seems to exceed that every month as far as the number of people, the number of jobs we actually have. And that's good. And that could stop at any moment, and it would not be bizarre or a tragedy or anything.
More folks in the job market, that sounds good, but they're not going to get paid in pennies, I guess. What's happening with the penny? I think we've heard that it's getting discontinued, and how should our country just change coins in general?
Well, we are finally doing away with the penny, which they cost us almost 4 cents apiece to make. So that's something good that's come out of the Department of Government efficiency. So it's going to be they're going to be the last ones made early in 2026. Not buying blanks anymore, and that's the key thing for this. So we'll have people rounding up and down for cash transactions, although online ones could well be unaffected. The problem, the bad news is that nickels are even more obscenely expensive to make. They're costing us almost 14 cents to make a nickel because there's so much nickel metal actually in them, and copper, which is, there's almost none of that in pennies that are being made now. So what we have, we have had for a long time, as I have seen in pertinent circles, we have needed a coinage makeover more than just getting rid of the penny for a long time. If you look at other countries' coins, they're worth so much more than ours are. We have the quarter now is worth less than a penny was around 1950 as far as spending power. So what we need to do, what we need to do is get rid of really all four of the coins, the penny, nickel, dime, and quarter we have going now, and replace them with a 10 cent instead of a dime and a 50 cent instead of a half dollar coin, relatively small, probably made out of copper, but something that won't cost anywhere near as much per unit of face value that the current ones do. That would allow us just to get rid of a decimal point and stop having all the fuss about all this unnecessary worry about people rounding up or rounding down or whatever, and just go to individual 10-cent units.
Yeah. Any chance of this happening? Any talk of that?
Well, it could happen. Someday it will happen. Someday something like this will happen, but I hope we don't burn another 50 years or whatever with coins that cost too much to make and a lot of confusion and so on. It's the countries that are informed, the ones are the similarly prosperous countries, especially in Europe and even Canada, which hasn't had a penny now for 29 years. They're getting way ahead of us, and the coins they carry around mean something when today's are getting less and less relevant. So there's an awfully good case for this.
Yeah.
I think it would be very beneficial for the country if it did happen.
Let's move on to some sneaky fees. Folks are used to these things sneaking up on them. What are some of those fees that now have to be disclosed up front, and which still don't?
Okay, an FTC rule went into effect this month saying that hotels, vacation rentals, and ticketing services all have to show in their upfront price all fees. They can't tack on any at the end as they've been doing. Now, the exceptions, the ones that are still out there, are airfares, car rental reservations, and movie tickets. So some of those you may still get quoted something lower, but then when you check out, you'll see there are other numbers being added to this.
Yeah.
So it's happening. Live events, live events are, even with things with like Ticketmaster and StubHub, are showing a total cost, including their service fees, which is, it's really only fair because you can't get away from them anyway. So
yeah, they're going to be there. Just tell me what they are up front.
Yes.
Not, right?
The problem with airlines is that they are governed by the Department of Transportation instead of the Federal Trade Commission.
Oh, so they don't.
And so they are going to have to make their own determination there, but there's an awfully strong case for that, obviously. I mean, I have really liked it the times where I have bought something, especially tires, where I've asked for the price. They've given me a price. It's been accurate. And then when I look at the invoice, I see that the so-called just plain price was only part of that. And there were additional fees and such, the road hazard and the disposal fee, but they were already included in the number they originally gave me. I think that's the way to do business. I'm convinced that that good business is honest business, and I think these things will continue to improve. But long story short, from this New York Times article I have here, stay on guard.
And rounding out our dollars and cents conversation, what are some common ideas about saving that are wrong about saving and debt and the buy now, pay later plans? And why is that?
Yes, there's getting to be some things creeping into social media conversations, some wrong ideas about these kind of things. Rather suspicious. We have a personal finance expert and the head of finance at an online savings platform who is explaining why these are not good. Well, one problem we have is that some people are saying it's not worth saving money unless you can save a lot, unless you can save a high percentage. And that's not true, really, for three reasons. Number one, everything counts if you can save money. If you can save $10 a week or even $10 a month or something, that's going to help you down the road. Number two, compound interest is amazing, and it comes into play more and more often. The more money you have, the more interest you have, and the interest on the interest you've earned and so on have gone up. And the third reason is that if you are savings, if you get used to a pattern of saving money every week, for example, or every paycheck, you're building a habit that will matter more, well, more or at least as much later on if you have more money to save. You're just used to it. You're thinking in those terms, and it can really pile up. It's amazing, I mean, how much saving for 10, 20, 30 years can add up to, even if it's not such large amounts of money. So other problems we have are buy now, pay later services. I mean, he says if you're buying now and paying later for something other than a big fixed price item like a car or a refrigerator, you can't afford it. You shouldn't be spending the money at all. It's destructive. So debt, there's quite a bit of controversy on that. Some people will say to pay off your debt first because the interest rates are higher. Some people are saying to start a savings account and put some money into that instead of paying off debt, because you can see the savings account grow and it may help you be happier with the debt or dealing with it, or seeing the progress you can make. So you'll have to make your own personal decision. I'm not sure there's a real right or wrong if one or the other of these works much better for you.
Well, let's talk about the rights and the wrongs in the numbers. What's going on with stock and precious metal, oil? How did things change in the markets and the numbers?
Okay, over the past week, we have, as of early this morning, gold $33.23 per ounce. That is down 27. The others all did very well. What was I saying about platinum and palladium? Well, the market loved my comments last week. Silver also went up almost $3 an ounce to $36.30. We have the ratio between silver and gold, after hanging around 100 for several weeks, is now 91.5 to 1. So then the other three metals are really having their time now. Gold is still quite healthy, but the gains were all elsewhere. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 42,763, gained just short of 500. It's a calm week for Washington, and it showed in the numbers. All that they have to do over there is behave themselves, and the stock market will go up consistently over time. That's what happened to the Dow. That's what happened even more so to NASDAQ, 19,530, up 417 points, which is over double the percentage gain of the Dow. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $64.43, the 42-gallon barrel, up $1.72. So it's up. It's the highest it's been for several weeks, but it's still low And relative stability really helps with oil because businesses need it a great deal. And if they think they'll need more of it, it's going up in price. Bitcoin, 105,736, up 900, staying strong. It's either at an all-time high or very close. British pound, 1.3573. That's up a quarter of a cent. The dollar got a little bit weaker. The euro did almost nothing, 1.1429, up 0.03 of a cent. And the Japanese 100 yen coin dropped a penny to 69 cents, just fluctuating again, but still that's higher than it's been for a while. So the dollar is down, but it may go the other way at any time. So really, what caused this thing, to be brutally frank, is that our president was tied up with a personal conflict with somebody, and that seemed to get his energy and his attention, and he didn't do as much messing around and threatening tariffs and trying to do other things that would mess up the economy. So he stayed out of the way of the economy this past week, and that's what the numbers are saying.
Well, let's hope they behave again this week. It's James B. Huntington with Local Economic Perspective. He's a local author and economist who joins us every Monday. James B., thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the summer concert season at Kindred Spirits in Milford, Pennsylvania, getting off the ground this weekend, and our own classical kit will have a preview. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, a pregnant woman sues the Trump administration for her baby's right to birthright citizenship.
Es que creo que es el derecho que tiene mi bebé porque primero está en la Constitución.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A celebrated guitar and mandolin duo is set to launch the summer concert season in Milford. Kindred Spirits Arts Program will present Duo Mantar on Saturday at Gray Towers National Historic Site. The performance showcases their diverse repertoire with music from Brazil, Uzbekistan, and Israel, including original works composed for the duo. Our own classical kit has more about the event that marks the opening of their annual concert series at Kindred Spirits.
The Gray Towers National Historic Site in Milford was the summer estate of the founder of the U.S. Forest Service, Gifford Pinchot. The historic home and beautiful grounds are one of the many cultural destinations in our area for nature lovers, and every summer they're also home to the Kindred Spirits Arts Summer Concert Series. This year's season includes classical, Celtic, and jazz performances, and it kicks off at 5:30 on Saturday, June 14th, with classical guitarist Adam Levin and mandolinist Jacob Reuven, Duo Mantar. I recently spoke with Adam Levin about the roots of Duo Mantar and the program they'll be performing in Milford. Here's a bit of that conversation. Good morning. I'm so excited to hear about your music, Adam.
Good morning.
I was looking at the program that you're going to be playing at Gray Towers, and I noticed you're going to start with this piece by Ernest Bloch.
Yes. The Ningun is a famous piece for the violin and piano. I thought that it would be a wonderful way to begin the program. It's an intimate but intense piece that draws people in immediately and lets them settle in to their chairs and buckle their seatbelts before the wild ride ahead of them.
Well, that sounds like a great way to start a concert. Yeah, and then you're going to be going to this piece called Oriental Pantomime. Could you tell us about that?
I love that piece. Yeah. So Jacob and I have been mavericks in the mandolin, guitar, chamber music scene because we have begun to contribute to the creation of new works. When we met one another, there was not a large body of mandolin, original mandolin and guitar repertoire. So we thought, you know, how can we solve this? And so we began commissioning composers from around the world. And one of them that we ran into was Jan Friedland from Siberia, who currently resides in Israel. And we asked him to write us a quirky piece for mandolin and guitar. And he did just that. And the piece, I think, taps into sort of a Brahmsian tone, mm-hmm. but it also allows us to explore the quirkier and more humorous side of chamber music. And I like to think that this piece is sort of two clowns playing together. And so it's a very improvisatory piece, not unlike the Ningun, but in a very different spirit. It's humorous, it's fun, and it allows us to explore different personalities and bring out more of the orchestral sounds of both instruments.
I'm a big fan of transcriptions, mm-hmm. you know, because I really like combinations of instruments that we don't always hear together and instruments that you don't always hear in chamber music concerts. So that kind of demands either doing what you're doing of going out and commissioning works or transcribing things. So,
absolutely.
You know, I'm wondering, like, because the mandolin and the guitar, as much as they have in common, there isn't a lot of repertoire for them. I'm wondering how you two met, because people often meet when they're playing in, you know, a piano and a violin, you know, they need each
Absolutely.
Other. So how did you guys meet and how did you start making music together?
That's a great question. It's actually an incredible story, I think, because it's all because my father sent me a YouTube link of Jacob performing an arrangement of Eugene Ysaÿe's Obsession, the preludio from the second sonata for solo violin. He transcribed that for mandolin. And I was so blown away by it, not only because of this sort of the virtuosity of in which he performed it, but also because I had transcribed the same piece for classical guitar. Uh-huh. So I was immediately drawn into his performance of it. And I so much so that I decided I had to write him. I felt compelled to just be a mensch and say, Jacob, well, you did a stand-up job. Just want to let you know. I wish you all the best. And I wrote him an email. And then 2 days later, he wrote me back and he said, you know, thank you so much for reaching out. That's so kind of you. And it's so unexpected. And you won't believe the timing. I just was awarded a grant from the Israeli Music Fund to record an album of modern Israeli music. And I and that project was supposed to be for mandolin and guitar. And he said, I don't know any guitarists. Would you like to be that guitarist? And I was like, yes. So since we didn't know one another, and since he lives in Spain with his wife, he said, why don't you come over here? We'll rehearse, we'll play concert and see if this works out. So I went to Spain and we played music for about 10 minutes and realized that this was a perfect fit. And there was a lot of musical chemistry and the rest was history. And that was the beginning, the seed of Duo Mantar. And we immediately were attracted not only to creating new repertoire, but creating a new frontier for this chamber music combination through arrangements, through commissions, through new concerti for this combination. So it was really, we knew it was going to be a wild time. And we knew that we had a great responsibility ahead of us to create a new music for this combination in the ears of audiences around the world, but we were up for the task. And the thing is, people already know the mandolin. People already know the guitar, not whether it's your classical guitar, Spanish guitar, acoustic guitar. They know the mandolin, especially in the States, as a bluegrass instrument.
Right.
And so it's already etched in their ear. So they are, it's just a matter of getting in front of them and presenting something fresh.
Yeah.
And they're immediately drawn into it. And so in some ways it's a bait and switch, because we're giving them something they already know, but just in a little bit different angle, different perspective. So it's been a joy. So that was in 2017 when I sent the email. 2018 we started our first touring, and we've been pushing to really re-script what it means to be a mandolin and guitar group. And what we found is that they're perfect extensions of one another, and that they offer such a large, vast array of colors. And it's a wonderful orchestral sound that we're able to create together. And I think what also helps is that we're great friends.
I think you should have dedicated Music from the Promised Land to your father.
I think it might be in the book. I think he was one of the dedicatees. But yeah, I actually, when I came back, I was just in Spain. We were just touring for the last 2 weeks. And I was like, Dad, one of the greatest gifts you ever gave me was this friendship with Jacob. And it's been a delight from the very beginning. And he's a musical brother to me.
It's interesting to me that besides this kind of wealth of composers with connections to Israel, you also on this program are going to have some Piazzolla, Argentina.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going to have Hamilton de Holanda.
Yes.
I really wasn't familiar with him, but I love anything Brazilian. So,
me too.
Yeah. So, is this a piece that he created for you?
Yes.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
Hamilton de Holanda is a virtuoso bandolim player. It's a Brazilian mandolin, basically. It's got more strings. It's got a slightly different shape.
Yeah, a little bit bigger instrument, yeah. Right? Yeah.
But it's definitely a relative to the mandolin, and both Jacob and I were inspired by his style of playing, which was very free, infused with choro, samba, much of the Brazilian musical idioms, which was really interesting to us. And a project that we are working on right now and that we're going to be sharing with the public when we're in Pennsylvania is the theme of seasons. Audiences worldwide know the Vivaldi and Piazzolla seasons. So we wanted to create a group of new pieces from a diverse group of composers that gave their interpretation of seasons. So mm-hmm. Hamilton wrote us four Brazilian seasons, one of which is a Brazilian waltz, another one which taps into a frevo rhythm. So it's exciting. It's improvisatory. It's exciting. It's rhythmically driven, and also just fantastic. It transports us immediately to Brazil, to the beaches of Brazil, to all the different areas of Brazil through his music. So it's really an incredible piece, and we're excited to give the world premiere on this U.S. tour. We met him and we were able to work on the piece with him. It's always incredible opportunity and very humbling to be able to work with the composer and to really get inside his brain and understand like what exactly he was thinking while he was writing it. And what's really cool is that he's a bandolin player, which is a sister to the mandolin. So he was able to play some of the sections with me so that Yaki could hear the spirit of the music, and he was able to help us, you know, better infuse the Brazilian spirit in our performance. And the rhythm, it's the rhythms that come from Brazil are not natural to me or to Jacob. So it's something that we have to really work on time in and time again. You know, at first it's with working with the metronome to keep that heartbeat going. And then after a while, you can just sort of loosen up. It's sort of like when you're on the dance floor, sort of loosening up your hips and then you just sort of feel the groove. And that groove is really the portal to understanding this music. So that's something that that's one of our goals across this tour, is to really get the audience to move their hips and to bob their heads a little bit.
Well, that whole first half of the program seems like it's going to be doing that. And then after the intermission, you're going to be playing a sonata. So
yes.
Just tell us a little bit about that.
So the sonata is one of the very few original sonatas for mandolin and guitar by the famous Israeli composer Yeheskel Brown. In this piece, I think it is a true gem in the repertoire. I think it's infused with so much consonance and peacefulness, and it really elevates one's spirit as they listen to the piece. And I think this piece, more than any of the other ones, exemplifies how the two instruments go hand in hand. I'm certain that people will enjoy that piece. And then it's a great segue into another new work by the composer Avner Dorman, who is a Israeli-American composer. And it's interesting. He wrote us a piece for the Seasons Project, but instead of using seasons, he uses rivers. So there are five bodies of water that he has chosen to exemplify, you know, different seasons. And it's a tour de force. Like the audience, it's a crunchy piece too, but the audience, all the audiences that we performed it for have just been entranced by it. They've been they've just been transported to another world. I think it's virtuosic, cool music. I think it perfectly exemplifies like where modern classical chamber music should be. It's rhythmically driven, it's melodic, it's got a little crunch to it, and at the end it just brings the audience to their feet.
Well, that sounds great. And then you're going to wrap it up with the three Jewish dances, which brings you full circle from beginning with that first piece. The name of that suite is named after an early rabbi, I believe, who maybe was the founder of Hasidim. I might be wrong about that, but then ending up with some very traditional kind of dances.
Yeah, so you've got the Yemenite dance, and then you've got the Hora, which is like the quintessential enjoyable dance that you typically hear at Jewish weddings. And that's just, everybody just loves it. It's so much energy, and we're playing at a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it's a joyous way to culminate the performance.
I'm excited that you're able to bring this to our area, and I really appreciate your taking the time to speak with me this morning. I really enjoyed hearing your story about how you came to be and about the music you're going to be playing. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. You can get ticket information for Saturday's concert and all the concerts at Gray Towers at kindredspiritsarts.org, and more information about Duo Montar at duomontar.com.
And thanks to Classical Kit for that report. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And we're joined in the studio before we go by Chef Brett August. He's about to get Sullivan County sizzling, firing up a new culinary showdown, the best burger in Sullivan County. Chef Brett is here now. Tell me more about this. Good morning.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
Good. How are you? Tell us what inspired you to launch this best burger competition.
Okay. So as you know, we know each other a while. I work with a really great broadliner food distributor called Ace Endico. I sell food to a lot of people in the area. And burgers are the thing now. It's barbecue season. And why not let the general area know and everybody else out there who's making the best burger, right?
Right. So how's this going to work? Who can enter it? How are these burgers being judged?
Great question. Okay. Well, the judge is me because I'm the man and I love burgers.
Okay.
It's really great. So I'm judging by a bunch of things: buns, special sauce, patties, you know, seasoning, toppings, really great things like this. You know, because a burger can just be cheese and a bun, you know, a little mayonnaise or this or that. So I'm surprising them. They don't know when I'm coming. Mm-hmm. They're going to show up. Could be dead. Could be slammed. I could get it to go. Who knows? I'm not telling them.
These are just like local restaurants in Sullivan County.
Local restaurants.
You're going to show up. And what do you expect this brings to the local food scene here when you're, you know, having this competition for the best burger?
Okay. So the local food scene is really great, as we know. There's tons of restaurants that are up and coming, opening every day. Livingston Manor, Calicoon, The Herring, even my area, Barryville. But what I want people to know is that there's chefs that are out there that are working really hard, that are producing really good food, using really good quality food as well, whether it's from Ascendico that I sell or the other food distributors in the area, let it be local or whatever. There's just really great dudes cooking food, and I want everybody to know about it.
What do the winners receive besides bragging rights?
So I'm running this through Cooking in the Catskills, my private-owned Instagram thing. So what I'm going to do is my wife and I are going to pick out something really, really great, and the winner's going to get it. It's wonderful. Not quite sure what it's going to be, but it's a really great surprise for the family of the chef, the owner, the team, or whoever it is. But it's going to be really nice, something they deserve. They work hard.
And do you have any plans to expand it beyond burgers in the future? You want to just see how the burger competition goes first?
Well, everybody's already asking me about a chicken sandwich, which is really great too, right? Some people want to do wraps. There's so many things. I consider myself probably like the food taster of Sullivan County. Like, you know, I'm the man.
Listen, you're the Jew.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That's it.
That's a pretty good title to have, pretty good job to have.
That would be pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
So
it could be like the Sullivan County Poet Laureate and then like the, you know, Sullivan County, you know, food taster. We should talk to somebody.
We should.
Right.
I mean, because everybody wants to know the hottest thing, right? Like who's making this or who's making that or who's sous vide-ing this or that. So it's really cool.
So folks can follow along with your Instagram. Give folks the info on how to follow along.
So Cooking in the Catskills. And what I'm going to do is, so they can follow me anyway because I'm always doing something cool, food, this or that or whatever. But I'm going to do pictures of the burgers as I go. And then I'll come back to you. We'll announce the winner. And then on Instagram, I'll do my little spiel as well.
And how long do you think this will be? When do you expect to have this wrapped up? You giving yourself the summer?
Timbo, I've tried 3 burgers already.
Just this morning.
I'm telling you, it was so far really, really good.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I've been bringing my wife too. You know, I love to bring her with me. But I'm hoping that I'll probably bang out the rest of the burgers this week. Then we'll come back and we'll go for it.
Yeah. All right, great.
I love burgers. I love eating.
All right, follow Cooking in the Catskills to see who is going to be crowned best burger in Sullivan County. Without going too far or giving too much away, before we go. What's your idea of the perfect burger?
Well, it's mouthfeel for me, right? And I don't want this. I don't like something overwhelming. Like, you know, I want something that I can bite and enjoy that fits in my mouth. Like these overwhelmingly big things turn me off. You know, something simple. It's called KISS in the culinary world. Keep it simple, stupid. That's where we're at.
All right. Chef Brett August, Cooking in the Catskills, looking for the best burger in Sullivan County. Follow along. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
Happy burgering.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hi, I'm co-star Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me, the Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Overcast with a slight chance of a rain shower this afternoon, high 60. Foggy this evening with thunderstorms developing after midnight, high low 55. Tomorrow, some morning thunderstorms. Then